A language is a structured system used for communication. So the idea to focus on communication when learning Chinese sounds obvious, but it's surprisingly new and rarer than you think. Hello and welcome to the Hacking Chinese podcast. In this week's episode, we are going to talk about communication. And you might think that since we're talking about learning Chinese and Chinese is a language, it's all about communication. But as I said in the intro, this is rarely the case, and most formal education is not very communicative, at least not in practice. If we look at modern language learning curricula, we can see that they do indeed focus on communication, which includes speaking and writing, so production, listening and reading, or reception, as well as various other combinations of these, i.e. interaction. Sometimes an explicit goal is also to translate or to interpret, or mediation in other words, but this is less important than it used to be. However, the fact that the objectives are communicative does not mean that language teaching in practice is communicative, as is very clear if you look at how languages are taught in general across the world. You can think back to how you learned languages in school, or maybe how you're learning Chinese in a formal setting right now. A good indicator is to look at how grammar was dealt with. So, were you tested on your ability to describe grammar, or were you tested on your ability to communicate effectively, which does require the use of grammar, but not necessarily the ability to describe it? Your answer will of course depend on what school system you went through, how old you are, and so on, but when I went to school, I was mostly required to be able to use grammar to communicate, especially when learning English, but I've also been required to describe a lot of grammar explicitly as well, particularly when learning French. Having worked with professional development for language teachers for almost a decade now, a time during which I've also talked with a lot of teachers and students, I think it's safe to say that explicit knowledge about the language is important in many settings, sometimes much more important than the ability to communicate. So, for example, if the final exam in your Chinese course tests your ability to read certain characters aloud, maybe write some of them by hand and give basic information about their etymology and so on, all these things are examples of explicit knowledge. And if somebody asks you how a specific grammar pattern is used, or maybe which are the two main usages of le or something like that, this is also explicit knowledge. I've taken exams that almost exclusively test this type of knowledge, but most exams do not. They also have a reading section where you're supposed to make sense of a passage in Chinese, maybe there's some listening comprehension, and maybe you write something. Maybe you introduce yourself, or you write a reply to a letter you also have in the exam, and that is more communicative. The problem here is that the link between explicit knowledge, your ability to describe the language and how it works, and implicit knowledge, which is things you can do without necessarily being aware of it or being able to describe it, is much weaker than most students and teachers think. If we stick with grammar as an example, it's easy to think that we learn grammar by having a pattern or structure presented to us and explained to us, and we then understand it so we can start using it in our own output. For this to work, however, explicit knowledge needs to smoothly transform into implicit knowledge, because that's what you use when you actually say things in Chinese and when you understand things. You do very rarely draw directly on explicit knowledge of, say, grammar to make sense of a sentence. Now, while there still is debate about the exact role of explicit instruction in language learning and language teaching, most researchers agree that language learning is largely implicit. It's also abundantly clear that teaching someone a grammar pattern and explaining it and making sure they understand it intellectually does not mean that they will then be able to use it. Still, if we look at how textbooks are structured, how formal education works, and especially how it works in practice, it seems that many still believe that this is true, that you can teach someone grammar by simply explaining it. And just as a reminder here, I'm using grammar as an example, but we could talk about other things, such as pronunciation or Chinese characters or something else. The relationship between implicit and explicit knowledge in second language acquisition is often called the interface issue, so that's a great search term if you want to read up on the research. So most people learn Chinese because they want to be able to communicate in Chinese, and yet most formal education is not geared towards providing you with this type of ability or competence. The simple and obvious way to alleviate this problem is to put communication at the heart and center of your strategy for learning Chinese. And this is true if you're studying on your own, and then you decide what you do so you can focus more on communication. But it's also true if you're enrolled in a course that itself doesn't focus that much on real communication, because then you can make sure you cover these things on your own in your spare time. But what is communication? What is real communication? And how can you use it to improve your Chinese? To understand what real communication is, let's start by looking at what it's not. When I say real communication, I imply that there is a type of communication which is somehow less real or false. And this is indeed the case, because many activities and approaches in language learning seem like they are about communication and they are called communication, but they are actually not. A good example of false communication would be reading a dialogue in your textbook. So A and B want to find a time to meet. Here is a dialogue. One student is A, the other B, go. Compare this with having an unscripted conversation where you use Chinese to compare schedules to find a suitable time to meet. You'd think that you're practicing real communication in both cases, but you're not. Following a script is an exercise in reading aloud, and it's not about communicating anything. The other person knows what you're going to say in advance because they also have the script in front of them. But if you're engaging in an unscripted conversation with intent of conveying and receiving information, then this is a communicative exercise. So therefore, we can say that real communication is meaning-focused. The point is not how you say something, but what you say. And we can also say that real communication is about conveying information or receiving information if you're listening or reading. A simple way to tell if an activity is communicative or not is to check if there is an information gap. So something I know but you don't, or the other way around. We can then use Chinese to bridge this gap, which is a great example of a communicative exercise. To illustrate this point further, let's have a look at some common classroom activities suggested by both teachers and textbook authors. These are not communicative, however, and we'll take a look at how we can turn them into a communicative exercise instead. Let's start by looking at the example I already mentioned with a scripted dialogue where two people try to find a suitable time to, say, watch a movie. Since both students have access to the script, this is not a communicative exercise, there is no information gap, and they don't need to rely on Chinese to convey any kind of information. It's just an exercise in reading aloud. Making this type of exercise communicative is not hard, you just need to make sure that there is an information gap. Maybe the students have access to different information from the textbook, so student A has a set of times when they are available, and student B has a different set. Or they can just use their real calendars, or something like that. Then they need to use Chinese to bridge the gap here and to be able to communicate. The second example is asking your classmates about where they live and how old they are. This is not real communication, at least not in a normal school setting, because most people know their classmates already and they know how old they are and roughly where they live. And yes, if this is the first time you meet someone and they are not your classmates from other subjects, well, then this could be genuine communication, depending on if you know the answer in advance or not. The obvious way to remedy this is simply to either talk with people you don't know or ask them questions to which you don't know the answers in advance. You can also do various types of role-playing where you have information about a character or yourself if you're playing this character, and you then answer according to this, and then people won't know the answers in advance. So the third example is writing a dialogue together with your classmates, and this is something I've done many times in school and even as an adult learning Chinese. The problem is that writing a dialogue and having a conversation are two different things, and if you ask most students to do this, they will plan the dialogue maybe mostly using English, and then they're not practicing much Chinese at all. And if they then go on and read the script aloud, well, then we're back to example number one. If you want to involve writing or preparing in some other way, you can make this communicative simply by focusing only on your side of the conversation. So you prepare what you are going to say and what you might want to convey in this conversation, but you don't look at what the other person is going to say in advance, and there is no script. So I don't mean to say that these non-communicative activities are completely useless. Some of them can serve as good warm-up, and especially then if you haven't learned much Chinese and you don't know many words and much grammar. Reading and listening to typical examples of how Chinese is used to communicate is essential, of course, even if you're not participating or producing language yourself. Okay, I've spent some time now discussing what communication is and what it isn't, but I haven't really talked about why you should focus on communication. I mean, I did say that if you want to learn to communicate in Chinese, and that's your goal for learning the language, it makes sense to put communication at the heart and center of your strategy for learning Chinese. But let's look at some more concrete benefits. The first one is motivation. Some people, including myself, find explicit knowledge about a language, such as descriptions of its syntax, phonology, and so on, rather interesting, but most people don't. Almost everybody finds communicative exercises motivating, though. As mentioned, most people learn Chinese to communicate, so to actually communicate in the language is motivating and rewarding in many ways. Number two, strategies. Being able to use Chinese in real-world situations is not just about knowing the right words and grammar. It's also about communicative strategies. If you don't understand, you need to be able to deal with that. You need to ask for clarification. You need to be able to tell someone that they're speaking too quickly. And if you figure out that you are saying something the other person doesn't understand, you need to be able to go back and repair that. And all these things require practice. And the best way to practice these strategies is to communicate. Number three, guidance. An often overlooked advantage of communicative learning is that it helps you understand what you need to do next. When you have a conversation in Chinese, it will be very obvious if you don't know how to say certain things or if you fail to understand certain other things, and that will then tell you what you should focus on more when you are studying. This could be something concrete, such as a word you don't know, but it could also be the realization that your tones are not very good because people seem to misunderstand you all the time, or it could be that you need to work on your communicative strategies that we talked about in the previous benefit. Number four, authenticity. When you focus on tailor-made learner resources too much, you learn only what a group of authors think you ought to learn. But when you communicate, you learn what you need to talk about the topics you care about. The Chinese you encounter when you communicate is also authentic and not created to teach you a grammar pattern or how a specific word is used. Number five, context. Most people agree that for input, so listening and reading, to be helpful, it needs to be meaningful and contextualized. This is rarely the case in classrooms, where we learn things in isolation and we don't really have a meaningful context to embed our communication in. So those were five reasons to focus more on communication when learning Chinese. And I think if your goal is to communicate in Chinese, you need to think twice before spending too much time on activities that don't involve communication. After all, your goal is not to be able to describe grammar rules or the origin of characters or whatever. It is to be able to communicate, and it's not at all obvious how the former leads to the latter. Like I said, I'm not saying that learning things explicitly is completely useless, but like I also said, it's less useful than most people think. Another way to say this might be that if you want to get better at running, you should think twice before going to the gym instead of going out running. I'm not saying that going to the gym is completely useless for runners, but it's certainly not what you should do most of the time. The idea of real communication that I've been talking about so far in this episode can be connected to Paul Nation's four strands that I also often mention on the podcast. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, you can check out episode 94, but I will also summarize it briefly here. According to Nation, roughly the same amount of time should be spent on the four strands, which are meaning-focused input, meaning-focused output, language-focused learning, and fluency development. So what I've called real communication here is actually what he calls meaning-focused input and output. It is the idea that the focus is on the information, the things you want to say or the things you want to understand, not how you say them, which grammar patterns you use, your pronunciation, and so on. Only the third strand in his model, meaning-focused learning, is about these types of explicit knowledge about the language. So, according to him at least, there is a role for this, but it's much smaller than it is in most courses. The fourth one, fluency development, is also something we covered in episode 99, and that is also meaning-focused. So we can say that, in this model, 75% of the time should be spent on communicating in some way or other. It's important to note that if you want to focus on communication, you need to use largely familiar language. So, for example, if you're reading a text that is very difficult, the focus is automatically going to be on the language itself, the form, because there might be lots of characters you don't know or grammar you don't know and so on. And then you can't really focus on the meaning because the language is in the way, as it were. In contrast, if you're reading a graded reader at your level, you will be able to focus on meaning, because even though there might be occasional characters or words you don't know, there aren't enough of these to actually make you unable to focus on the meaning. This is true for speaking and writing as well, so if you want to focus on conveying meaning and communicating, you need to start with topics where you are largely familiar with the vocabulary, grammar, and so on needed to talk or write about these things. This means that the lower your level is, the more carefully you need to design these activities. And if you just started learning Chinese, there aren't that many things you can say. But let's say you learn the numbers and you learn how to tell the time and the days of the week and so on. You could then easily engage in a communicative activity where you try to find a suitable time to watch a movie or something. Or if you have a tutor or language exchange partner or something, spend a lot of time discussing these practical things. When are you going to meet next time? What does your schedule look like? When do you have time? Because these are things you can communicate about with very limited knowledge of Chinese. And this will also bring all the other benefits that we've mentioned before. And just to mention one example, strategies. So if you're a beginner and you need to find a time where you can meet your tutor next time, you need to know phrases like, what did you say? Can you repeat that? Things like that, because otherwise you won't be able to communicate here. It will be too hard. So these strategies will be built into your learning from day one. Then as you learn more Chinese, you will be able to communicate about a wider range of topics. However, just because you become an intermediate or advanced learner, it doesn't mean that the courses you take or the teachers that you have will focus on communication. And so here I want to add a few things about the fourth strand in Paul Nation's model, fluency development, and this was something we discussed in episode 99 if you want an entire episode about this. The point is that to be able to develop fluency, you need to work largely with language you already know. But this is, as many of us have experienced, not the case when you go to Chinese class or when you have a Chinese tutor, because they love cramming in lots of new words, and it's as if they thought that the more words you learn, the better they are as a teacher. So they make sure that you learn lots of new things every single time. But what you might actually need is just to use the language that you already know, and this will build your fluency. This will enable you to communicate using the language that you already have learned. There are many ways you can build fluency, and I discussed some of them in that episode, so check out episode 99 if you want more about this. So to conclude this episode, I'd like to say that if you want to learn to swim, you need to get wet. So in other words, if you want to learn to communicate in Chinese, you need to communicate. You will not become a good communicator in Chinese by reading dialogues in your textbook or by doing vocabulary or grammar drills. Yet this is where many courses will have you spend your time, and it's also how you are assessed in many formal situations. What you will discover sooner or later is that sticking to carefully choreographed exercises doesn't prepare you for using Chinese in the real world. Don't think that reading dialogues in your textbook will prepare you for having a real conversation. The two activities look similar on the surface, but they are two very different things. Focusing on the former will give you good grades, but focusing on the latter will improve your ability to communicate in Chinese. So next time you engage in a language learning activity, ask yourself if there is an information gap. Is there real communication going on? If the answer is yes, then great. If the answer is no, you need to carefully consider what other benefits this activity might have. As I've said many times already, not everything needs to be communicative, but if it isn't, I think you need to have a good reason to engage in the activity, and you need to not do it too much. In conclusion, real communication makes learning more engaging and fun, and also prepares you for real-world situations, which is the explicit goal of language education and also the personal goals of most learners. If you want to learn more, communicate more. Thank you for tuning in to the Hacking Chinese podcast. If you like this episode, please share it. More information and inspiration about learning and teaching Chinese can be found at hackingchinese.com. See you in the next episode, and until then, good luck with your studies.